The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. I understand this weekend is going to be beautiful as it's Easter weekend. Hopefully you'll have time to spend at church and with your friends and family. I know we will be in Ellettsville at my mom's house for our annual Easter lunch and Easter egg hunt. So we'll be there for the first time without her, and her memory will be ringing in our head, in our mind, in our hearts as we all celebrate Easter. So I understand it's going to be a great weekend, and I'm not going to not believe those guys on the news last night that told me that. So we're going to have a fun show today. Got a lot going on, of course. One of the things I was thinking about when it comes to the program, what is the purpose of the program? Now, we're going through some exercises at the office right now on pillars and purpose and things like that to create, not that we already don't have a great culture, but to create a culture that people understand and buy into. And I was thinking about this a little in the fact that we want to inspire people, we want to convict people, and we want to create action in people. And that's always been my goal. So I actually got back on board with my podcast this week, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. Recorded one today on this Thursday that I believe will air on Monday, and the title is, Are Tax-Free Bonds Really Tax-Free? So I think you'll enjoy it, get a little bit fired up. It was around 12 to 13 minutes long, so I'm going to try to get back on doing these at least every couple of weeks. You know, weekly is, after I went through my main material, kind of hit all the high points, it gets a little bit harder to come up with meaningful content, and you just don't want to do a podcast just to do it. But when you're getting thousands of people now uniquely downloading a podcast, you almost feel obligated to continue to crank out material. So hopefully we'll get back on that bandwagon and continue to put out some pretty good stuff. We're going to be talking to Rod in just a little bit, and also understanding why interest rates even matter to the stock market. And last week I ended on sort of a note on taking a deeper dive into what a retirement life looks like. And Doug Hughes is going to join me for that, probably via the telephone. I barely got into it at the end of the program, but I want to take a little deeper dive. And then also health savings accounts. You know, I've talked about health savings accounts a lot on the show and the podcast, but the great triple threat of retirement planning, what is it, how does it work, and why is it such a great retirement planning tool, not just a health savings account as it's described. So a lot of fun stuff to talk about in today's program. Of course, this first segment brought to you by Unrivaled Electric. They are your full-service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators, which we seem to have needed those lately, and solar arrays, which hopefully this weekend they'll just soak them up. They're veteran-owned. Unrivaled Electric, if they want to be your electrician like they are mine, give them a call, 812-361-3604, or find them on Facebook. And Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. They'll offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And lastly, Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind. Yes, the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance Like of the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. In fact, that was one of the things we're going to talk about later. What do people want in retirement? Peace of mind, period, right? How do you get it? Are you given that? Or is that something you just take for granted? What is it? We're going to dig deep into what it is that people in retirement don't want and what is it that they do want. And then we're going to build some conversation around that with Husey. All right, before we get Hot Rod on, The market's been kind of crazy, right? Because last week, the market rallied on this receding fear of the widening banking crisis. You know, we had two big bank failures, I think a third one, whatever. But that sort of, you know, receded a little bit. And then we had a resurging interest in technology and communication names. So all the major indices last week were up over 3%. So boom, there we go. So in absence of further bad news in that banking sector, made for this pretty good week, with high-quality tech and communication service stocks leading the market, while easing banking worries laid the groundwork for the week's positive gains, growing conviction. This is so funny because Rod is going to comment on this, that the Fed rate hikes were ending. They haven't said they're ending, folks. And positive inflation data out of Europe and a little bit here helps support the renewed enthusiasm for the market. So we had a little encouraging inflation data on the domestic front on Friday that also added to the enthusiasm and optimism, igniting further gains to cap off a pretty satisfying week. Now, what is the Fed looking at? This Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, the PCE. That's the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. So it was up 0.3% for the month, below the expectations and below the prior month of 0.6. The year-over-year increase of 5% improved from January's rise of 5.3. Energy prices were down. Of course, that's going to change with the reduction of output by OPEC. And that offset some increases in food, goods, and services. So personal income was up a little bit. Consumer spending increased a little bit. So all of this has led people to believe that it is possible for the Fed to do something that has been improbable in the past. And that's to bring this economy in for a soft landing, lowering inflation, right? Lowering the cost of goods and services all around, right? And also not go into a major recession. So this week, we've had manufacturing reports come out. We've had factory orders come out. We've had Wednesday an employment report come out. Thursday, jobless claims came out. And then tomorrow and Friday, or sandwiched between your Thursday and Saturday morning, the employment situation report, which is always an interesting one to look at. So lots of things to talk about. Let's get Hot Rod on the phone, see what's been going on this week and what he thinks about the market's attitude towards the Fed will be ending this crazy fast rate hike soon. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you're enjoying your evening on a Thursday, or if you're listening on a beautiful Saturday morning in Bloomington, you're enjoying the heck out of it as well. We have Rod Holloway now on the phone. Of course, Rod is the equity portfolio guy down at our shop, CFCI. And Rod, I know you are on Glass in the Afternoons on Mondays and Fridays, so people that listen to the show a lot get to hear a lot of Rod Holloway. But I basically led the show off, Rod, talking about last week, how stock kind of rallied on the receding fears of this widening bank crisis. All the major indices were up. We had tech and communication services stocks kind of lead it. Growing conviction that the Fed rate hikes were going to be ending, and positive inflation data out of Europe and some domestic stuff as well. And, you know, when we look at what's been happening this week, we've had manufacturing indexes come out. We've had factory orders, some ADP reports, jobless claims today on Thursday. A lot of data, and it almost seems, Rod, like as interest rates continue to go up, the Fed keeps saying one thing, the market keeps reacting another way. They're in a tug of war here, right, between the Fed and the market. And I grew up, you grew up in this market, in this environment, and there's a common theme that we've always run with, and that's do not, or you cannot, fight the Fed. And that seems to be where we're at right now.
Yeah, most certainly is. And I think what some people have to realize is it doesn't matter whether the Fed is right that they should keep raising rates and they need to be higher, or they're wrong and they've done enough and they should pause. What matters is what the Fed actually does. That's what the impact is going to be. That's how things are going to be. So which is where, as you and I had a conversation earlier this morning discussing that, you know, interest rates and the move that they've made here in the last couple of weeks, things like that, signal some positive things moving forward. But when you have such a massive disconnect between what the market is thinking, which the market is thinking anywhere from 2 to 3 price or rate decreases by year end, and the Fed's still in the camp that, hey, we're still going higher and we're going to stay there for longer. When you have such a huge disconnect between the two, the potential realization of a let's call it a come to Jesus of, oh, okay, hey, we're wrong on this, and the correction to bring things back into more harmony as they potentially see some things similar, could be a bit volatile and a little bit violent within that. So you kind of have to lean towards the Fed as far as calling the Fed right, not because they're going to be correct, but right that we need to believe their actions, because up to this point, they've done what they told us they were going to do, and there's no reason for us to assume that the Fed is suddenly going to tell us one thing and then show up at the meeting and do something different.
Well, for the quarter, the S&P, I know it doesn't feel this way, folks, but the S&P is actually up about 7.5% for the first quarter of 2023. But one thing I keep reminding folks, Rod, is that if we were down 18%, if the S&P was down that much in, and I know many of you were down more than that. I see your stuff. You come through, you're in a growth fund of blah, blah, blah. You're in this, and some of you are down 20, 25, 28%. I get it. And so when I say these words, I'm not talking directly to you. I'm just talking in broad market perspective. And then I tell you, hey, it's up 7.5%. And you're like, hey, I'm not maybe up that much. You know, it's just, I'm just talking in broad strokes here. But when you're down 18 and you go up 7.5, that doesn't mean that you're only down 11. If you're down 18, you've got to get much more than 18 back to even get back to even. So it could be, you never know, slugfest for the rest of this year. You could end up higher, you could end up lower. I'm kind of looking to 2024 as the year that we actually seem to maybe get things back on track. But it is what it is, like you said, Rod, and borrowing rates have skyrocketed. Prime rates now, what, 8%, I believe. I remember the first time I was treated big time as a borrower. I was in my 20s. I went to Monroe Bank. The lender was Dave Landis. I needed a loan to put a deck on my trailer that my wife and I just bought as a newly married couple in 1993. And someone, I guess, put a good word in for me, and I got a prime rate loan, and it was 7.5%. And I thought, man, this was great. And now we set at 8% on prime rate, the Fed, which is really what matters. You know, what are banks charging people to borrow money?
Right.
And the Fed keeps the pedal down. Inflation may be rolling over some. But still has a long way to go. My guess is we'll see some more rate increases, probably at least 2 more. And the one thing we haven't been talking about is, you know, we've had the double whammy going on here. Rates, all we talk about. But don't forget, folks, the Fed has been, you know, unwinding this massive balance sheet that they've had where they were the number one buyer of government bonds for several years, and now they're not. And that's also being pushed, you know, pulled out of the system. I guess we kind of stopped talking about that for a while, but Rod, all this is still going on.
Yeah, most certainly is. And I think the quantitative tightening has a little bit less of an impact brought on by the financial blip, let's call it, that we've seen so far, because I don't think it's gone far enough to be deemed a crisis as of yet, but most certainly something to pay attention to. You know, you have some new windows opened at the Fed for the banks to borrow from the Fed, and the Fed is granting them the opportunity to make some borrows based on par value, not market value on those things. So that's not truly liquidity being fully injected in there, but it does dampen the effects of the quantitative tightening that the Fed was doing before, because it may loosen up the banks to do a little more lending. I still don't view it a crisis, but there is an issue within the financial system because of how fast the Fed raised rates. Most of these banks and their reserve capital are setting in relatively safe high investment grade to treasury type investments on the fixed income side of the world. And many of these were bought at extremely low interest rates. So guess what? The value of them is down considerably. So it does have an impact on what's available for banks to loan, their willingness to how much they want to loan. So there is still a little bit of some worries and concerns within the financial sector, although, as I have stated multiple times on Glass's show, I think that it could be more of a self-fulfilling problem than it's a problem in which other banks are going to end up looking like what happened at SVB or Signature or Silver Creek, that their business model, I still believe, is relatively unique, not meaning they're the only three doing it, but it isn't widespread amongst the banking institutions out there. But there's no doubt that how quick federal funds rate have rose over the last year, year and a half, most certainly does have a slight negative impact on financial institutions.
You know, the people I talk to, and I talk to a lot of people, they don't even want to look at their statements. They're like, I know it's terrible. I'm not going to worry about it. I just want to, you know, and the attitude. I actually pulled out the old investor psychology chart that I've used many, many times on this show over the years, of the whole idea of, you know, euphoria and then denial, and you get into, you know, go through all these different emotions to despondency and capitulation, all that kind of stuff, to hope and optimism again. I don't know where the psychology of the investor is right now, or the consumer. I know we had numbers come out. No real consumer stuff this week. Jobless claims came out today. I didn't even see what they were, Rod.
Yeah, I didn't see the number, but the headline or the discussion was that it obviously must have been a little bit better than expected, meaning more jobless claims. I know that sounds odd, that, oh, more jobless claims, that's a good thing. Well, in this environment, it's viewed that, which, once again, this is just a great example of what makes the Fed's job so difficult. They have two mandates, full employment and stable prices. Well, right now their focus is on stable prices. Well, to get more stable prices, meaning to bring inflation down more than they have, guess what? They probably need to get off of full employment and have unemployment grow. Now, it's not very often the Fed has directly said that. They are hopeful that they can accomplish that through job openings going away and certain things like that will help accommodate what they're after, versus actual losing of jobs. We did get some of that this week. That's the JOLTS index, or the JOLTS number that tracks that. That has dropped below 10 million, so there was 9 million some job openings, because for the longest time we were setting at close to 11 million job openings and only 5 or 6 million people looking for jobs. So that is coming down a little bit, jobless claims a little bit higher. We are starting to see some weakening within the manufacturing sector as some of the manufacturing numbers have come in a little bit lower. We are starting to see that some of the jobs data that's coming in, whether it is jobless claims or actual jobs number, obviously we had the very hot one previously, but some of the new weekly numbers and things like that, the ADP that came out yesterday, they are starting to show that there is some slowdown, there is some slowness within the economy. You haven't seen a whole lot of that in the consumer side of things. The consumer has still continued to spend. He still continues to hold up fairly well. You do know that they are feeling it, because just like anyone else, the best way to get it is on the street and listen to people murmuring as they're walking out of Kroger or they're walking out of Walmart. Are they excited about the grocery cart, right, and how much they just spent, and the grocery cart's probably three quarters less than what it was a year ago, but they spent the same dollars.
Yeah, I heard that exactly today. I ran down to Kroger there on 2nd Street to grab a few things for a quick bite to eat for lunch, and I heard exactly that walking. That guy was staring at his receipt, and he was just mumbling and grumbling, and I'm like, yeah, you know, here I am with my blueberries and turkey, you know, and I was moving out, and I spent $10, I think, and so anyway, but that might last me for a few days. Yeah, I did see last week consumer spending actually ended up growing again by 0.2%, and personal income was up as well by 0.3%. Rob, we're going to take a break. I'm going to have you around for one more segment, because I want people to understand why interest rates even matter to the stock market. When interest rates go up, bond values go down. Why? Why does it matter to stock values when interest rates go up? Just a very basic understanding that I think when I explain this to a group this week, they're like, oh, now I get it. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So So today I recorded a podcast on Are Tax-Free Bonds Really Tax-Free? And I hope you'll enjoy that, listening to it, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. But one of the things I talked about were bond values and bond prices. And I think when you understand bonds, you understand a lot. So number one, when a bond is issued, it's usually issued at par. Par is 10 bonds equals $10,000. I pay $10,000 as a brand new bond. I get paid the stated interest rate. And then when it matures, we get the 10 grand back. Now, most bonds, almost all bonds that we buy, are on the secondary market. So someone bought a bond, they traded the bond, we bought the bond. And it really depends on what the interest rate is, what the credit rating is, and what current interest rates are. So to Rod's point in the previous segment, if you bought a bond paying 3%, let's say, and it matures 10 years from now, and you bought that 2 years ago, well, today you can buy something that's closer to 5%. So why would anyone want your 3% bond? They will take your 3% bond. They'll gladly take your 3% bond. But they're not going to pay you $10,000 for it. They might pay you $8,500. Well, they'll pay you $8,500. They'll keep getting 3% on that $10,000, and at maturity they get $10,000. So they not only receive the interest, but they receive the accrual from the discount back to par. And that's what you call total return. Or yield to maturity. You take the coupon plus or minus the premium or discount, and that comes up with your yield to maturity. That's why bond values go down, and that's why it was one of the worst years ever in my lifetime for bonds. That's why balanced portfolios, target date portfolios, you know, that retirement date 2030 was one of the worst ones that you owned, because not only were stocks down a bunch, bond values were down a bunch, and it was that double whammy. But Rod, what I want to ask you is to help explain, why does interest rate increases matter to stock values? Now, I'll tell you this one point that I knew and learned early in my life, and that is when interest rates are higher and there's some magic number, and I don't know exactly what it is, I have some theories, where the investor says, you mean I'm going to take risk over here in owning companies that have maybe a dividend, maybe not, or I'll take this over here where I can get paid 5 or 6% and I know it's contractual. Okay, I'll do that. And that's where you have this investor decision line. But Rod, there's more to the story than that, because when interest rates are low, then investors are like, yeah, I'll buy it for earnings. It's no different than if interest rates are low, I can pay more for my house. If interest rates are low, you can do a lot more. You can pay more for things because the cost of your money is lower. When the cost of money goes up, then I'm not willing to do that anymore. And that, I think, is something people need to just at an elementary level, understand why does interest rates matter to stock values?
Yeah, so like you said, you gave the simple and basic trade-off between looking at what I can earn in a risk-free environment versus what I can potentially make by taking on some risk of owning equities or bonds that aren't treasuries and carry more risk than that. But the bigger picture of the trade-off for equities is there is a cost to pursue growth. All companies want to grow revenue and grow earnings, and there's a cost to that. And there are many different ways that companies feel that cost. Some of that cost is they borrow money to pursue that growth. So they have an interest loan or an interest rate on their loan from the bank. That interest is rate to go up, it costs them more, so it costs more to pursue the growth. They can issue bonds. Well, if they issue bonds, they owe an interest payment to the people who bought that bond. They can issue stock and capital out there to raise that capital. Once again, you know, when you have lower interest rates, all of those avenues of pursuing the growth opportunities in front of those companies cost a little bit less, which also means the investor into those stocks are willing to pay a higher earnings multiple to chase that growth because they know they have the ability to chase it at lower cost. Not only can they chase it at lower cost, you also have to understand there eventually becomes a trade-off in which a company says, you know what, yep, we have some more growth opportunities in front of us, but we're not sure we're willing to pursue them at what it costs to pursue them today. So it's not just a simple calculation of, okay, they borrowed the money, their interest on the loan is higher this year than it was 5 years ago, So their expenses have gone up. So that's going to take down a little bit of the revenue and earnings side of the balance sheet. No, it's also the fact that the company may say, hey, you know what? It's just not worth that cost to pursue this amount of growth over here if they don't think it's enough growth or it increases the margins on whatever their business is that they're going after. So that is why interest rates, while you don't really think of it from a common stock perspective, it does have an impact on common stocks, and it does help dictate what people are willing to pay for that future earnings growth. Because that's the thing you have to remember. When you're buying stock, you're buying for what's going to go on in the future. You're not buying it for what's already happened or what you think is going to happen the day you bought it. You're buying it for what you think they're going to be able to achieve as they move forward in growing that revenue stream, in growing that earnings stream, and interest rates have a huge impact on that.
Rod Holloway, everyone. Great job as always, Hot Rod. Know we'll hear you on Friday afternoon on Big Show Friday, as I know Glass always looks forward to that. And plus, we have NFL draft stuff coming up soon. I know I'm sure he'll pick your mind about who the Fins will be trying to grab in the draft as well. So, Rob, we appreciate it very much, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Hey, just a quick heads up, Dave. For this Friday, it's a good Friday. The market's closed. Glass and I will not be speaking on Friday.
Oh, yep. Okay.
You'll hear me again on the following Monday on Glass in the Afternoon. I know Glass is there, so if you would like to call him, I'm sure he'd be more than happy to hear from you. But he and I have said we'll take Friday off and we'll talk again on Monday.
I'll just hide
Dave,
some.
Have a great show.
Thanks, brother. I'll just hide some Easter eggs around and make Glass hunt Easter eggs. He can get distracted easily. We'll be right back. We're going to have Doug Hughes join us next. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. As promised, we had a little handoff there from Hot Rod to Hot Hughes. I've never called you that, Hughesy, but, and I'm not sure anyone else has ever called you that either.
I doubt that would ever be the case.
Well, we have, you and I, you know, we're all about, you know, emotions and helping people make good decisions, giving people some peace of mind of what they're doing, what they're accomplishing. And, you know, you and I kick this stuff around all the time. We had a little tag word the other day, are you retiring or are you dying? You know, that was something we came up with. Retiring or dying? You know, let's retire. Let's have fun. But one of the things that you and I have done for a long time is have helped people understand what a great retirement looks like and how you can achieve that without a ton of worry and concern about what's happening here or there. But the key is to have a plan. And I know that's so overused, and you're like, oh, here we go again, a plan. But to understand what I mean by that is that a plan, especially during the initial design, don't expect it to be extreme precision or over-engineered or too granular, because forecasting the future of expenses and tax projections, it's tough. I mean, it's really difficult to predict the exact spending needs of anybody over a long period of time. I mean, when I look back over the hundreds of plans that I've been part of and many, many lives that I've been part of now for almost 30 years, there's a couple of consistent themes that always end up coming up. Number one, nobody completely follows the projections that we made at the beginning of the plan, no matter how precise we tried to be. Rates of return are never exactly what we assumed over a period of time. Actual tax liabilities have never been perfectly aligned with the projections that we calculate. Inflation has never been what we projected. People don't die when we have projected them to die, right? If you tell me when you're going to retire, when you're going to expire, man, we can make a perfect plan. I mean, let me give you one example, Hughesy, and then I want you to comment on that first.
Yeah, so one of the things I think you mentioned is it's difficult, and I would tell you it's actually impossible. Nobody knows exactly when tax rates, we have good ideas, when tax rates can change on your municipality locally, for
right.
example. And that has nothing to do with federal, but that can change your plan. Nobody knows when they're going to die. Nobody knows when they're going to get sick. And the truth is, David, nobody knows exactly when they're going to need to replace a refrigerator or some kind of an appliance. So We retirement, you go into it with this phrase that I think we actually did coin this one.
the known unknowns. I mean, we know that things are coming up. We just don't know when. And so we would say it's pretty much impossible to narrow things down precisely. But what we can do is we can begin to eliminate some of the risks that are associated with those unknowns by doing proper planning that, by the way, has nothing to do with what the Dow Jones reported in returns last week. It has everything to do with just navigating through what we call risks. And that's part of the real value of having a plan that goes back to this word. And David, we've taught this word so many times, we should probably coin this one as well. But having a coordinated portfolio, not necessarily a perfect portfolio, but a coordinated portfolio that adjusts for the unknowns that are coming. And they are in front of every one of us.
I told someone the other day, we're kind of creating a blurry baseline during the NCAA tournament that gives us just a guideline against what we can measure some future changes. I mean, one example of the variability of this world that we live in, let's just consider, of course, something near and dear to my heart, the tax laws over the past 25 to 40 years, which happens to span the length of most retirements. The top marginal rates have varied from 70% to 37%. Long-term capital gains have ranged from 55% to 15%, and in some situations, zero. Social Security went from zero taxable, 100% tax-free in 1982, to as much as 85% taxable today. Estate tax exclusions moved from $250,000, $600,000 in my career, to $11 to $12 million. Roth accounts, where you could put money away and grow it tax-free, weren't even around until 1997. So that's the typical span of someone's retirement life. And as we say, when we do little simulators of probability of successes, we say, hey, in a 30-year retirement, a lot of things can go really, really great, and a lot of things can go really, really wrong. And our goal is to make sure, and Doug's point, to make sure as few things go wrong as possible. Hey, one of the things that I know we've also claimed to somewhat coin, but I don't know that we did, and that is the idea of a person's spending patterns in retirement, where you come out of the gate, right, and you're like excited. I always ask people, what are you going to do the first week? What are you going to do the first month of retirement? Tell me what your plans are. Because it's important to have a money plan. You need to have a life plan. So if you create an income plan as more of a map, trust me, it's all going to be different than what you really think. But people simply want the peace of mind. And what does that mean? It means they want the confidence to retire, knowing they're not going to run out of income, as well as permission, in my opinion, to spend their money so they can enjoy assets that they work so, so hard to get. And it's okay to have what we call an early spending retirement, because I know, you know, everyone knows who just sits back and looks at their parents or grandparents or maybe their own personal lives. We do have go-go years. We do have slow-go years. We do have no-go years. And although the utility payments aren't going to change, or the taxes on my real estate are not going to change, or my food costs may or may not change, or certainly probably not eating out like I used to, but your lifestyle will change. And it's okay to create this early spending or early type of loaded retirement plan. And Doug, I think people don't get that. They don't even know it's an option that you can do that, because right. I can tell you, you're not going to spend at 90 years old on an inflation-adjusted basis what you're spending at 65. It ain't going to happen, folks. I've seen it. Doug?
Right. Yeah, and David, I was just meeting with someone talking about an ambitious decade, and they had quite an ambitious decade, their first decade of retirement. And, the truth is, I said, well, that sounds wonderful, and I'd like to go with you on some of those trips and eat at some of those restaurants and everything. However, we sometimes have to take a step back and recognize that an ambitious decade can be funded, but you are given in exchange for that and maybe less ambitious second decade. And so one of the challenges with retirement planning is we're marketed to pretty well with commercials of vineyards and sailboats and things of that nature. But the truth is that you can, to your point, you can plan a pretty ambitious decade, and you should plan that, but you'd need to make sure that the next decade or the next decade even following that you understand you're exchanging time for money and money for time. And so we do see that. And honestly, you're correct. The last decade, the third decade, typically in retirement, is one that that you spend a good portion of your time not as consumptive as you did the first decade.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. Not to say retirees stop traveling after 10 years, but they usually hit their bucket list items by then. They may start, you know, in their late 70s, 80s, still traveling domestically, but probably not internationally as much. You know, there's certain things that just get backed off. And that's what we've seen and witnessed in our many, many years of. And the other thing, make sure that you have money set aside for short notice things, because you never know when you need money quickly, and you need money that's in a source that won't mess you up tax-wise, that will have little consequences to any market adjustments, market risk, and that's part of having a great spending plan. What about this idea of slowing down, Husey? I mean, we've seen it. You've seen it with your mom. You know, I've seen it with clients. I've seen it in my family, where you do go through that first phase of retirement, and it's different for everyone. It's not. Let me tell you this. I was at the doctor Monday morning. It was early morning. I had a doctor's appointment early morning, like 7:30 in the morning. And I check in. I actually saw someone from church walk out, talk to him for a couple minutes, and went back to do my whatever they do to you nowadays when you're 53 years old. But here's the thing. I was born in 1970, and I'm done with my exam. I'm, you know, happy-go-lucky. Do I need to check out? No, you're good. And I heard this lady say her birth date, and it struck me because her birth date was the same date of mine, January 16th. She says 1/16/71, and I go, and I thought, huh. I turned around, looked over my left shoulder. She looked like she was 71, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, she's 52 years old, and I'm like, So I'm like, she looked to be in her slowdown phase now. So everyone's slowdown phase is different.
Look at the different, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because as you well know, I mean, your dad, he's still real active, right? But yet there's certain people that are much younger that are much less active. And maybe to no fault of their own sometimes. It's just the way life rolls. So, yeah, everyone has their own go-go period, and everyone has their own slow-go. So you can't even really define that as well. So when you sit down to put an early spending plan together, It's probably not real responsible to say, okay, I've decided age 80 that I'm going to absolutely slow down and not do this stuff anymore. Because ask a healthy 80-year-old how they feel. They don't feel 80. They don't look 80. They don't even know what 80 is supposed to be like, right? They don't know what this stuff is supposed to be like. So slowing down phase, we've seen it, but it's different for everyone.
Absolutely. And David, you know, the thing that we always remind people to do is stay engaged and don't play, as we talked about earlier, the should have done this, should have done that. Make sure you get those things off the list.
Doug, real quick, I mean, because I need to move on because I'm running close to the end here, but the different phases that we all go through in life is, and I mentioned this last week, you're going to have tough decisions to make. You're going to have to address long-term care at some point in your life. You're going to have to more than likely live alone at some point in your life. I mean, whether it's through divorce, but typically, you know, through the death of one spouse. We have witnessed that it can be living alone a really long time, in many cases just a few years. But there are a lot of phases of life, a lot of phases of retirement, tough decisions, long-term care decisions, what does it look like living alone decisions. And I think for most people, just understanding the different ages and stages of life and having a good, you know, backbone, a good structure behind all this. And I don't just mean financially. I mean emotionally. I mean connectivity with family, friends, your church family, whoever it might be. But, Doug, I mean, it is important to really lay out this mindset and this framework of what this retirement, a great retirement, should look like, and how not to have that just-in-case retirement that I've been talking about for the last month that I've enjoyed so much talking about, that just-in-case retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of it's philosophical, too, and just in life planning. You know, we talk a lot, David, in the programs and the education series that we do just about life planning in general. And unfortunately, so much is just geared towards returns or money. But life planning is such a big part of this. And how do you want to fill that? And A well-planned life, although it's never perfect, as you said so well earlier, a well-planned life, although it's never perfect, seems to provide over our, you know, my 25 years or 30 years of doing this, seems to provide a real difference between an unsatisfied, unfulfilled, kind of a guessing, walking around what's next kind of retirement. And so we again remind everyone to take a step back and don't be afraid to plan. Don't be afraid to life plan. Don't be afraid to life plan just because the markets are up or down or not having a satisfying retirement. And you know, you can still retire and rewire when you're in your 70s and 80s. It doesn't happen just in your 60s. You can rewire at any time. And we recommend and foster that for people the best we can.
Thank you, Doug. We're going to let you go. I'll talk to you back at the ranch.
Okay. See you here. Take care.
Let's take a quick break. We got to wrap up the show in two quick segments. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right. We ran over and over and over, which is not uncommon. So I really had an entire segment on the health savings account, the triple threat of retirement planning. What is it? How does it work? And why is it such a great retirement tool? How you can do a one-time rollover from your IRA to an HSA, and why it should take priority over other retirement accounts. You get the match in your 401k, but max out that HSA. Invest it like a retirement account. Don't use it for current expenses. Reimburse yourself later, and it's a tax-free deal. Tax deduction in, tax-deferred growth, tax-free out, the greatest savings vehicle. The best show on earth is the health savings account. I know that's a quickie, but we had to tell you at least a little bit about that. I've got a whole bunch of that on my podcast, 2025, The Final Drive. What you need to know to win, pick it up on your podcast. Let's take another quick break, come back, and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, this is not a not-for-profit radio station. That's why we have those profit breaks. Hey, real quick, we're going to wrap up the show. I'm still working on Tom Hegness, having scheduling issues, but I promise I'll get him on sometime soon. Next week, I'll be live in the studio, but then I leave the following day for Paris. We have a conference in London. I'm going to Paris for 3 or 4 days with the family, flying into London, have a conference there. I'm going to really put eyes on this whole uproar over moving the retirement age from 62 to 64, but really understanding the fact that we can learn some lessons from how they're handling this in France, because how do we tackle the problems with Social Security? The longer you wait to deal with something, the more drastic the actions have to be, and that's what's happening in France right now. So I'll take a longer dive into that as well next week as I get prepared for my trip to France, and also a bigger, deeper dive on what longevity risk really, truly is and how to deal with it. Have a great weekend, everyone. Happy Easter. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.